I had asked him to. We were setting up the School of Youth for Social Service, and we needed to learn the real situation of the people in the rural areas. We wanted to find ways to apply nonviolence and loving kindness to help poor people improve their standard of living. It was a beautiful movement for social improvement. Eventually, we had 10,000 workers. The communists said our Buddhist movement was pro-American, and the mass media said that we Buddhist monks were disguised communists trying to arrange a communist takeover. We were just trying to be ourselves, not aligned with any warring party. In 1967, Brother Nyat Tri and seven other social workers were kidnapped by a group on the extreme right. He has not been heard from since then. One day, Nyat Tri was walking on the streets of Saigon when an American soldier standing on a military truck spit on his head. Brother Nyat Tri came home and cried and cried. Being a young man, he was tempted to fight back, and so I held him in my arms for half an hour in order to transform that feeling of being deeply hurt. I said, "My child, you were not born to hold a gun. You were born to be a monk, and your power is the power of understanding and love. The American soldier considered you to be his enemy. That was a wrong perception of his. We need soldiers who can go to the front armed only with understanding and love." He stayed on with the School of Youth for Social Service. Then he was kidnapped and probably killed. Thich Nhat Hanh is a big brother of the monks and nuns at Plum Village. His handwriting looked almost exactly like mine. And he wrote beautiful songs for buffalo boys to sing in the countryside. How can we wash away that kind of injustice? How can we transform the injustice received by whole nations? Cambodians, Bosnians, Palestinians, Israelis, Tibetans, all of us suffer from injustice and intolerance. Instead of being brothers and sisters to each other, we aim guns at each other. When we are overtaken by anger, we think that the only response is to punish the other person. The fire of anger continues to burn in us, and it continues to burn our brothers and sisters. This is the situation of the world, and it is why deep looking is needed to help us understand that all of us are victims. I told Brother Nyat Tri, "If you were born into a family along the coast of New Jersey or California, and if you read the kinds of newspapers and magazine articles that those soldiers read, you would also believe that all Buddhist monks are communists, and you would spit on the head of a monk too." I told him that American GIs were trained to look on all Vietnamese as enemies. They were sent here to kill or be killed. They are victims, just like the Vietnamese soldiers and Vietnamese civilians. The ones who hold the guns and shoot at us, the one who spit at you, they are not the makers of the war. The war makers are in comfortable offices in Beijing, Moscow, and Washington, D.C. It was a wrong policy born of a wrong understanding. When I went to Washington in 1966, I met with Robert McNamara, and what I told him about the nature of war was entirely true. Half a year later, he resigned as Secretary of Defense, and recently he wrote a book and confessed that the war in Vietnam was a terrible mistake. Perhaps I helped plant some seeds of understanding in him. A wrong perception was responsible for a wrong policy, and a wrong policy was responsible for the deaths of many thousands of American and Vietnamese soldiers, and several million Vietnamese civilians. The people in the countryside could not understand why they had to die like that, why the bombs had to fall on them day and night. I was sleeping in my room close to the Buddha Hall on the School of Youth for Social Service campus when a rocket was fired into that hall. I could have been killed. If you nourish your hatred and your anger, you burn yourself. Understanding is the only way out. If you understand, you will suffer less and you will know how to get to the root of injustice. The Buddha said that if one arrow strikes you, you'll suffer. But if a second arrow hits you in the same spot, you'll suffer 100 times more. When you are a victim of injustice, if you get angry, you will suffer 100 times more. When you have some pain in your body, Breathe in and out and say to yourself, it is only a physical pain. If you imagine that it is cancer and that you will die very soon, your pain will be 100 times worse. Fear or hatred, born of ignorance, amplifies your pain. Prajna Paramita is the savior. If you know how to see things as themselves and not more than that, you can survive. I love the Vietnamese people, and I tried my best to help them during the war. But I also saw the American boys in Vietnam as victims. I did not look at them with rancor, and I suffered much less. This is the kind of suffering many of us have overcome, and the teaching is born out of that suffering, not from academic studies. I survived for Brother Nhat Tri and for so many others who died in order to bring the message of forgiveness, love, and understanding. I share this so they will not have died in vain. Please practice deep looking, and you will suffer much less from disease, injustice, or the small pains within you. Deep looking leads to understanding, and understanding always leads to love and acceptance. When your baby is sick, of course, you do your best to help him, but you also know that a baby has to be sick a number of times in order to get the immunity he needs. You know that you can survive too, because you have developed antibodies. Don't worry. Perfect health is just an idea. Learn to live in peace with whatever ailments you have. Try to transform them, but don't suffer too much. During his lifetime, the Buddha suffered too. There were plots to compete with him and even to kill him. One time, when he had a wound in his leg and people tried to help him, he said it was only a small wound and he did his best to minimize the pain. Another time, 500 of his monks went off to set up an alternative sangha, and he took it very much in stride. Finally, the difficulties were overcome. The Buddha gave very concrete teachings on how to develop inclusiveness. Maitri, love, Karuna, compassion, Mudita, joy, and Upeksha, equanimity. If you practice these four immeasurable minds, you will have a huge heart. Because bodhisattvas have great compassion, they have the capacity of receiving, embracing, and transforming. Because they have great understanding, they don't have to suffer. This is a great gift for the world and for the people we love. The fourth petal of the flower is Virya Paramita, the perfection of diligence, energy, or continuous practice. The Buddha said that in the depth of our store consciousness, Alaya Vijnana, there are all kinds of positive and negative seeds. Seeds of anger, delusion, and fear, and seeds of understanding, compassion, and forgiveness. Many of these seeds have been transmitted to us by our ancestors. We should learn to recognize every one of these seeds in us in order to practice diligence. If it is a negative seed, the seed of an affliction like anger, fear, jealousy, or discrimination, we should refrain from allowing it to be watered in our daily life. Every time such a seed is watered, it will manifest on the upper level of our consciousness, and we will suffer and make the people we love suffer at the same time. The practice is to refrain from watering the negative seeds in us. We also recognize the negative seeds in the people we love and try our best not to water them. If we do, they will be very unhappy and we will be unhappy also. This is the practice of selective watering. If you want to be happy, avoid watering your own negative seeds and ask others not to water those seeds in you. Also, avoid watering the negative seeds in others. We also try to recognize the positive seeds that are in us and to live our daily life in a way that we can touch them and help them manifest on the upper level of our consciousness. Manovijnana. Every time they manifest and stay on the upper level of our consciousness for a while, they grow stronger. If the positive seeds in us grow stronger day and night, we will be happy and we will make the people we love happy. Recognize the positive seeds in the person you love. Water those seeds and he will become much happier. In Plum Village, we practice flower watering. recognizing the best seeds in others and watering them. Whenever you have time, please water the seeds that need to be watered. It is a wonderful and very pleasant practice of diligence, and it brings immediate results. Imagine a circle divided in two. Below is the store consciousness, and above is mind consciousness. All mental formations lie deep down in our store consciousness. Every seed in our store consciousness can be touched and manifests itself on the upper level, namely our mind consciousness. Continued practice means trying our best not to allow the negative seeds in our store consciousness to be touched in our daily life, not to give them a chance to manifest themselves. The seeds of anger, discrimination, despair, jealousy, and craving are all there. We do what we can to prevent them from coming up. We tell the people we live with, "If you truly love me, don't water these seeds in me. It is not good for my health or yours." We have to recognize the kinds of seeds not to be watered. If it happens that a negative seed, the seed of an affliction, is watered and manifests itself, we do everything in our power to embrace it with our mindfulness and help it return to where it came from. The longer such seeds stay in our mind consciousness, the stronger they become. The Buddha suggested a practice called changing the peg. When a peg of wood is not the right size or is rotting or in disrepair, a carpenter will replace it by putting another peg on exactly the same spot and driving the new peg into the old one. If you have a mental formation arising that you consider to be unwholesome, one way to practice is to invite another mental formation to replace it. Many seeds in your store consciousness are wholesome and beautiful. Just breathe in and out and invite one of them to come up and the other seed will go down. This is called changing the peg. The third practice is to touch as many positive seeds in your store consciousness as you can so that they will manifest in your mind consciousness. On a television set, if you want a certain program, you push the button to bring you that program. Invite only pleasant seeds to come up and sit in the living room of your consciousness. Never invite a guest who brings you sorrow and affliction. And tell your friends, "If you love me, please water the wholesome seeds in me every day." One wonderful seed is mindfulness. Mindfulness is the Buddha in us. Use every opportunity to touch that seed and help it to manifest on the upper level of your consciousness. The fourth practice is to keep a wholesome seed as long as possible once it has manifested. If mindfulness is maintained for 15 minutes, the seed of mindfulness will be strengthened, and the next time you need the energy of mindfulness, it will be easier to bring up. It is very important to help the seeds of mindfulness, forgiveness, and compassion to grow, and the way to do this is to help them be present in your mind consciousness as long as possible. This is called transformation at the base, Ashraya Paravritti. This is the true meaning of Virya Paramita, the perfection of diligence. The fifth crossing over is Dhyana Paramita, the perfection of meditation. Dhyana is pronounced Zen in Japanese, Chan in Chinese, Tian in Vietnamese, and Son in Korean. Dhyana, or meditation, consists of two aspects. The first is stopping, shamatha. We run our whole life chasing after one idea of happiness or another. Stopping is to stop our running, our forgetfulness, our being caught in the past or the future. We come home to the present moment, where life is available. The present moment contains every moment. Here, we can touch our ancestors, our children, and their children, even if they have not been born yet. Shamatha is the practice of calming our body and emotions through the practice of mindful breathing, mindful walking, and mindful sitting. Shamatha is also the practice of concentrating, so we can live deeply each moment of our life and touch the deepest level of our being. The second aspect of meditation is looking deeply, vipassana, to see the true nature of things, you look into the person you love and find out what kinds of suffering or difficulty she has within herself and what aspirations she holds. Understanding is a great gift, but your daily life conducted in mindfulness is also a great gift. Doing everything mindfully is the practice of meditation, as mindfulness always nourishes concentration and understanding. The sixth petal of the flower is Prajna Paramita, the perfection of understanding. This is the highest kind of understanding, free from all knowledge, concepts, ideas, and views. Prajna is the substance of Buddhahood in us. It is the kind of understanding that has the power to carry us to the other shore of freedom, emancipation, and peace. In Mahayana Buddhism, Prajna Paramita is described as the mother of all Buddhas. Everything that is good, beautiful, and true is born from our mother, Prajna Paramita. She is in us. We only need to touch her to help her manifest herself. Right view is Prajna Paramita. There is a large literature on Prajna Paramita, and the Heart Sutra is one of the shorter discourses in that collection. The Diamond Sutra and the Ashtasahasrika Prajna Paramita discourse in 8,000 verses are among the earliest discourses in that collection. Prajna Paramita is the wisdom of non-discrimination. If you look deeply into the person you love, you'll be able to understand her suffering, her difficulties, and also her deepest aspirations. And out of that understanding, real love will be possible. When someone is able to understand us, we feel very happy. If we can offer understanding to someone, that is true love. The one who receives our understanding will bloom like a flower, and we will be rewarded at the same time. Understanding is the fruit of the practice. Looking deeply means to be there, to be mindful, to be concentrated. Looking deeply into any object, understanding will flower. The teaching of the Buddha is to help us understand reality deeply. Let us look at a wave on the surface of the ocean. A wave is a wave. It has a beginning and an end. It might be high or low, more or less beautiful than other waves. But a wave is, at the same time, water. Water is the ground of being of the wave. It is important that a wave knows that she is water, and not just a wave. We, too, live our life as an individual. We believe that we have a beginning and an end, that we are separate from other living beings. That is why the Buddha advised us to look more deeply in order to touch the ground of our being, which is nirvana. Everything bears deeply the nature of nirvana. Everything has been nirvanized. That is the teaching of the Lotus Sutra. We look deeply and we touch the suchness of reality. Looking deeply into a pebble, flower, or our own joy, peace, sorrow, or fear, we touch the ultimate dimension of our being, and that dimension will reveal to us that the ground of our being has the nature of no birth and no death. We don't have to attain nirvana because we ourselves are always dwelling in nirvana. The wave does not have to look for water. It already is water. We are one with the ground of our being. Once the wave realizes that she is water, all her fear vanishes. Once we touch the ground of our being, once we touch God or nirvana, we also receive the gift of non-fear. Non-fear is the basis of true happiness. The greatest gift we can offer others is our non-fear. Living deeply every moment of our life, touching the deepest level of our being, this is the practice of Prajna Paramita. Prajna Paramita is crossing over by understanding, by insight. Perfect understanding is present in all the other perfections. Perfect understanding is like a container. If the container is not baked well in the kiln, there will be cracks, and the liquid in it will flow out. Prajna Paramita is the mother of all the paramitas, the mother of all Buddhas. Pranya Paramita is like the wings of the bird that can carry it anywhere. Without right understanding, none of the other paramitas can go very far. These are the practices of the six paramitas offered by the Buddha. Each of the six contains the other five. Understanding is giving. Meditation is giving. Continued practice is giving. Inclusiveness is giving. And mindfulness training is giving. If you practice giving deeply, you are also practicing understanding, meditation, and so on. In the same light, we see that giving is mindfulness training. Understanding is mindfulness training. Meditation is mindfulness training. Continued practice is mindfulness training. And inclusiveness is mindfulness training. If you practice one paramita deeply, you practice all six. When there is understanding and insight, meditation will be true meditation. Continued practice will be true continued practice. Inclusiveness will be true inclusiveness. Mindfulness training will be true mindfulness training. And giving will be true giving. Understanding increases the quality of the other five practices. Look into your situation and see how rich you are inside. See that what you have in the present moment is a gift. Without waiting any longer, begin to practice right away. The moment you begin to practice, you'll feel happy right away. The Dharma is not a matter of time. Come and see for yourself. The Dharma can transform your life. When you are caught in your sorrow, your suffering, your depression, your anger, or your fear, don't stay on the shore of suffering. Step over to the shore of freedom, non-fear and non-anger. Just practice mindful breathing, mindful walking, and deep looking, and you will step onto the shore of freedom and well-being. You don't have to practice 5, 10, or 20 years to be able to cross over to the other shore. You can do it right now. Chapter 26. The Seven Factors of Awakening. The seven factors of awakening, Sapta Bodhyanga, are mindfulness, investigation of phenomena, diligence, joy, ease, concentration, and letting go. Bodhyanga is made up of two words, Bodhi and Anga. Bodhi, awakening, enlightenment, comes from the root Bodh, which means to wake up, to be aware of what is going on within and all around you. A Buddha is one who is awakened. Anga means limb. Sapta Bodhyanga can also be translated as the seven limbs, or factors, of enlightenment. After sitting in meditation at the foot of a ficus religiosa, known by Buddhists as the Bodhi tree, when the morning star arose, the Buddha realized enlightenment and said, "How amazing that all living beings have the basic nature of awakening, yet they don't know it. So they drift on the ocean of great suffering lifetime after lifetime." It means that the potentialities of the seven factors of awakening are already in us, but we don't know it. It is said that the Buddha was reluctant at first to share the insight he experienced under the Bodhi tree. Only after continuing his meditation did he realize that many beings would benefit if he offered concrete ways to help them wake up. The seven factors of awakening offer a description of both the characteristics of awakening as well as a path to awakening. Imagine a tree with seven large limbs, each representing one factor of awakening. Every year, each of these branches grows longer and sends out new shoots with new leaves. Enlightenment is growing all the time. It is not something that happens once and is then complete. It is reassuring that the Buddha regarded joy and ease among these seven elements. The first and main factor of awakening, the first limb of the Bodhi tree, is mindfulness, smriti. Smriti literally means remembering, not forgetting where we are, what we are doing, and who we are with. Mindfulness always arises in the context of a relationship with ourselves, other people, or things. It is not something we keep in our pocket and take out when we need it. When we see a friend on the street and recognize her, we have not taken recognition out of our pocket. It arose in the context of the situation. Our breathing, walking, movements, feelings, and the phenomena around us are all parts of the relationship in which mindfulness arises. With training, every time we breathe in and out, mindfulness will be there, so that our breathing becomes a cause and condition for the arising of mindfulness. You might think, I am the cause for mindfulness being present. But if you look around, you will never find an I. The telephones ring, the clocks chime, your teacher and your sangha can be favorable causes for mindfulness being present. Imagine yourself doing walking meditation on a beach when suddenly the thought arises, do I have enough money in the bank? If you return your awareness to your feet making contact with the sand, that is enough to bring you back to the present moment. You can do this because you have practiced walking meditation before. But it is your feet and not I that remind you to be present. In the Discourse on the Four Establishments of Mindfulness, the Buddha asks, if you practice the four establishments of mindfulness, how long will it take to become enlightened? First, he answers, 7 years. But then he says, it can be as short as half a month. It means that awakening is always available. It only needs favorable conditions. The sun is there even when it is behind the clouds. The Buddha said, by practicing the four establishments of mindfulness, you will realize the seven factors of awakening. Investigation of phenomena, Dharma Pravichaya, is the second factor of awakening. We humans love to investigate things. Often, we want the results of our investigations to fit a certain mold or prove a certain theory. But at times, we are open and allow things simply to reveal themselves. In the latter case, our knowledge and our boundaries expand. When we want to investigate the bud on the branch of the tree, we might ask, where have you come from? Where are you going? Are you really that small? The bud might reply, I will grow into a leaf, green in the summer, orange in the fall. Then I will fall to the earth, and in 2 years, I'll become a part of the earth. I am really not small. I'm as large as the earth. With mindfulness, investigation takes us deeply into life and into reality. The third factor of awakening is virya, which means energy, effort, diligence, or perseverance. Energy comes from many sources. Sometimes just thinking about what we might gain in the future gives us energy. In Buddhism, the sources of our energy are mindfulness, investigation, and faith in the practice. When we look deeply, we see that life is a miracle beyond our comprehension. But for many young people today, life is meaningless. Many thousands of young people commit suicide every year. In some countries, more young people die from suicide than from traffic accidents. We need to help young people cultivate the life energy that comes from experiencing the wonders of life. We need to help their lives have meaning. Even if we are in pain, if we can see meaning in our life, we will have energy and joy. Energy is not the result of good health alone, or the wish to achieve some goal, material or spiritual. It is a result of feeling some meaning to our life. Making an effort at the wrong time or place dissipates our energy. Sitting in meditation for lengthy periods before we have developed good concentration might cause us to dislike meditation and even to stop sitting altogether. When Siddhartha practiced meditation under the Bodhi tree, his concentration was already highly developed. When Kashyapa told Ananda that Ananda would not be invited to attend the first council of the Buddha's disciples because he did not have a high enough degree of awakening, Ananda sat in meditation all night. And by dawn, he realized the fruit of arhatship, the transformation of all afflictions. When Ananda arrived at the council, Kashyapa and the others recognized that he had had a breakthrough. His shining presence was proof enough. The fourth factor of awakening is ease, prashrabdi. Diligence is always accompanied by ease. In the so-called third world, one often feels more ease than in the overdeveloped countries of the first world. Here, everyone is under enormous pressure, and people need stress reduction programs. Their stress comes from constant thinking and worrying, and from their lifestyles. We have to learn ways to bring our energy from our head down to our abdomen. At least once every 15 minutes, we need to practice letting go. When we are sick, we stay in bed and do nothing. Often we don't even eat or drink. All of our energy is directed toward healing. We need to practice resting even when we are not sick. Sitting meditation, walking meditation, and mindful eating are good opportunities for resting. When you feel agitated, if you are able to go to a park or a garden, it is an opportunity for rest. If you walk slowly and remember to take it easy, if you are able to sit and do nothing from time to time, you can rest deeply and enter a state of true ease. The fifth factor of awakening is joy, priti. Joy goes with happiness, sukha. But there are differences. When you are thirsty and a glass of water is being served to you, that is joy. When you are actually able to drink the water, that is happiness. It is possible to develop joy in your mind, even when your body is not well. This will, in turn, help your body. Joy comes from touching things that are refreshing and beautiful, within and outside of ourselves. Usually, we touch only what's wrong. If we can expand our vision and also see what is right, this wider picture always brings joy. The sixth factor of awakening is concentration, samadhi. Sam means together, a is bringing to a certain place, and d is the energy of the mind. We collect the energy of our mind and direct it toward an object. With concentration, our mind is one-pointed and still, and quite naturally, it stays focused on one object. To have mindfulness, we need concentration. Once mindfulness is developed, concentration, in turn, becomes stronger. Concentration is not wholesome in itself. A thief needs concentration to break into a house. The object of our concentration is what makes it beneficial or not. If you use meditative concentration to run away from reality, that is not beneficial. Even before the time of the Buddha, many meditators practiced concentration to remove themselves from the world. Practicing this kind of concentration, the Buddha was not able to liberate himself from suffering. So he learned to use his concentration to shine light upon his suffering, and he was able to go deeply into life and develop understanding, compassion, and liberation. The seventh factor of awakening is equanimity, or letting go, upeksha. Equanimity is an aspect of true love. It is far from indifference. Practicing equanimity, we love everyone equally. In the Kakachupama Sutta, example of the saw, the Buddha says, "Even if robbers cut your limbs off with a saw, if anger arises in you, you are not a follower of my teachings. To be a disciple of the Buddha, your heart must bear no hatred. You must utter no unkind words. You must remain compassionate, with no hostility or ill will." As a young monk, I memorized these words and even put them to music. This teaching touches our most noble intention, but it is the opposite of our strong habit energies. To transform these habit energies and realize our noblest intention, the Buddha and the Venerable Shariputra taught us, 1. To practice equanimity in the face of harsh words. 2. To learn not to feel annoyance, bitterness, or dejection. And 3. Not to feel elated when praised, because we know that any praise is not for us as an individual, but for many beings, including our parents, teachers, friends, and all forms of life. In The Greater Discourse on the Example of the Elephant's Footprint, Shariputra shows the way to meditate on the four great elements in order to practice equanimity. When we meditate on the elements of earth, water, fire, and air inside and outside our bodies, we see that we and they are the same. When we transcend our idea of a separate self, our love will contain equanimity, knowing that we and others are truly the same. These seven factors are limbs of the same tree. If mindfulness is developed and maintained, the investigation of phenomena will meet with success. Joy and ease are wonderful feelings nourished by diligence. Concentration gives rise to understanding. When understanding is there, we go beyond comparing, discriminating, and reacting, and realize letting go. Those who arrive at letting go have the bud of a half smile, which proves compassion as well as understanding. The seven factors of awakening, if practiced diligently, lead to true understanding and emancipation. The Buddha said that the four immeasurable minds of love practiced with the seven factors of awakening bring complete, perfect enlightenment. The seven factors of awakening are, therefore, the practice of love. Chapter 27. The 12 links of interdependent co-arising. The 12 links of interdependent co-arising, pratitya samutpada, literally, independence, things rise up, is a deep and wonderful teaching, the foundation of all of Buddhist study and practice. Pratitya samutpada is sometimes called the teaching of cause and effect, but that can be misleading, because we usually think of cause and effect as separate entities, with cause always preceding effect, and one cause leading to one effect. According to the teaching of interdependent co-arising, cause and effect co-arise, samutpada, and everything is a result of multiple causes and conditions. The egg is in the chicken, and the chicken is in the egg. Chicken and egg arise in mutual dependence. Neither is independent. Interdependent co-arising goes beyond our concepts of space and time. The one contains the all. The Chinese character for cause has the character great inside of a rectangle. Cause is great, yet at the same time limited. The Buddha expressed interdependent co-arising very simply. This is because that is. This is not because that is not. This comes to be because that comes to be. This ceases to be because that ceases to be. These sentences occur hundreds of times in the discourses of both the northern and southern transmissions. They are the Buddhist genesis. I would like to add this sentence. This is like this because that is like that. In the sutras, this image is given. Three cut reeds can stand only by leaning on one another. If you take one away, the other two will fall. For a table to exist, we need wood, a carpenter, time, skillfulness, and many other causes. And each of these causes needs other causes to be. The wood needs the forest, the sunshine, the rain, and so on. The carpenter needs his parents, breakfast, fresh air, and so on. And each of those things, in turn, has to be brought about by other conditions. If we continue to look in this way, we'll see that nothing has been left out. Everything in the cosmos has come together to bring us this table. Looking deeply at the sunshine, the leaves of the tree, and the clouds, we can see the table. The one can be seen in the all, and the all can be seen in the one. One cause is never enough to bring about an effect. A cause must, at the same time, be an effect. and every effect must also be the cause of something else. Cause and effect inter are. The idea of a first or only cause, something that does not itself need a cause, cannot be applied. After the Buddha passed away, many schools of Buddhism began to describe interdependent co-arising more analytically. In the Visuddhimagga, Path of Purification, of the Theravada school, Buddhaghosa listed 24 kinds of conditions, Pali, Paccaya, the necessary and sufficient conditions for something to arise. 1. Root cause. 2. Object. 3. Predominance. 4. Priority. 5. Continuity. 6. Co-nascence. 7. Mutuality. 8. Support. 9. Decisive support. 10. Pre-nascence. 11. Post-nascence. A cause can be born after the effect. 12. Repetition. 13. Karma. 14. Karma result. 15. Nutriment. 16. Faculty. 17. Dhyana. 18. Path. 19. Association. 20. Dissociation. 21. Presence. 22. Absence. 23. Disappearance. And 24. Non-disappearance. In the Sarvastivada school, 4 kinds of conditions, pratyaya, and 6 kinds of causes were taught, and this later became part of the teachings of the Vijnanavada school of Buddhist psychology. According to this analysis, all 4 kinds of conditions must be present for everything that exists. The first of the 4 kinds of conditions is the cause condition, seed condition, or root condition, hetu pratyaya, just as the seed is the cause condition of the flower. There are said to be 6 kinds of cause conditions. 1. Motivating or creative force, karana hetu. Each conditioned dharma is the general cause for all things except itself. It is a co-present cause, offering no obstacles, because no dharma constitutes an obstacle to the arising of dharmas prone to arising. This condition has the function of empowering and not restricting. 2. Concurrent condition, sahabhu hetu. Sometimes 2 root conditions need to be present at the same time. If we draw a line, AB, A and B both have to be there. The same is true of lamp and lamplight. All pairs of opposites are like that. One cannot be present without the other. Above and below come into existence at the same time, as do the ideas being and non-being. These coexistent dharmas mutually condition one another. 3. Seed condition of the same kind, sabhaga hetu. Similars cause similars. Rice produces rice. Wholesome causes bring about wholesome effects. Faith and joy, for example, make a stable practice possible. And unwholesome causes bring about unwholesome effects. 4. Associated condition, samprayukta hetu. A wholesome and an unwholesome seed support each other in giving rise to something. This is called association or correspondence, and it applies only to mental events. Someone gives money to his church because he feels guilty about the wrong livelihood that has allowed him to make the money. The seed of guilt due to wrong livelihood is unwholesome. Giving is wholesome. The result is that the elders of the church tell him that they want him to transform his livelihood more than they want his money. This will hurt his pride, but can lead to much happiness in the future and can help alleviate his guilt. 5. Universal condition, sarvatraga hetu. The cause is present everywhere, in every part of our body, as well as throughout the universe. The 6 elements of earth, water, fire, air, space, and consciousness are examples of universal conditions. 6. Ripening condition, vipaka hetu. In our store consciousness, not everything ripens at the same time. When we bring home bananas, some ripen before the others. When we hear a Dharma talk, some of the seeds sown ripen right away, while others might take many years. A seed of one kind can also transform and ripen into something different. At first, an orange is a blossom. Then it is something green and sour, and later it ripens into a sweet fruit. A seed of love can ripen as a seed of anger. When we begin our sitting meditation, we may feel confined and agitated. After a while, our meditation may ripen into something quite relaxing and enjoyable. The second kind of condition, according to the Sarvastiva Deens, is called condition for development, Adipati Pratyaya. This can help certain seeds develop or can obstruct their development. Everyone has a seed of faith or confidence, for example. If you have friends who water this seed in you, it will grow strong. But if you meet only favorable conditions, you will not realize how precious this seed is. Obstacles along the path can help our determination and compassion grow. Obstacles teach us about our strengths and weaknesses so that we can know ourselves better and see in which direction we truly wish to go. One could say that the Buddha's practice of austerity was unfavorable to the development of his path. But if he had not undertaken those practices and failed in them, he would not have learned and later taught the middle way. When your intention is strong, unfavorable conditions will not dishearten you. In difficult moments, you will stick to your friends, fortify your convictions, and not give up. The third kind of condition is the condition of continuity, Samanantra Pratyaya. For something to exist, there needs to be a continuous succession, moment after moment. For our practice to develop, we need to practice every day. Walking meditation, listening to Dharma teachings, practicing mindfulness of the four foundations in all our activities, staying with the same Sangha, and practicing the same teachings. If we put a frog on a plate, it will jump right off. If you do not practice steadily, you'll be like a frog on a plate. But when you decide to stay in one place until your practice fully develops, we can say that you have reached the state of froglessness and have begun to practice continuity. The fourth kind of condition is object as condition, Alambana Pratyaya. If there is no object, there cannot be a subject. For us to have confidence, there has to be an object of our confidence. When we feel despair about something. Our idea of the future, our idea of happiness, or our idea of life. When we are angry, we have to be angry at someone or something. According to the Buddha, all phenomena are objects of mind. When we perceive the image or sign of any phenomenon, we know that the object of our perception resides within our own consciousness. Can we live in a way that helps us see the causes that are present in the effects and the effects that are present in the causes? When we see this way, we begin to have insight into interdependent co-arising, and this is right view. In early Buddhism, we speak of interdependent co-arising. In later Buddhism, we use the words interbeing and interpenetration. The terminology is different, but the meaning is the same. After hearing the Buddha teach about interdependent co-arising, Ananda said, "Venerable Lord, the teaching of interdependent co-arising appears to be deep and subtle, but I find it quite simple." The Buddha replied, "Do not say that, Ananda. The teaching of interdependent co-arising is indeed deep and subtle. Anyone who is able to see the nature of interdependent co-arising is able to see the Buddha." Once you can see into the nature of interdependent co-arising, you will be guided by your insight and you will not lose your practice. The teaching of impermanence is implicit in the teaching of interdependent co-arising. How could we live if we were not nourished by multiple causes and conditions? The conditions that make it possible for us to exist and to change come from what is not us. When we understand impermanence and non-self, we understand interdependent co-arising. In this gatha, Nagarjuna links interdependent co-arising with emptiness. All phenomena that arise interdependently, I say that they are empty. Words come to an end because their message is false. Words come to an end because there is a middle way. All teachings of Buddhism are based on interdependent co-arising. If a teaching is not in accord with interdependent co-arising, it is not a teaching of the Buddha. When you have grasped interdependent co-arising, you bring that insight to shine on the three baskets, Tripitaka, of the teachings. The three baskets are sutras, teachings of the Buddha, Vinaya, rules of conduct, and Abhidharma, systemized presentations of the teachings. Interdependent co-arising allows you to see the Buddha, and the two truths allow you to hear the Buddha. When you are able to see and hear the Buddha, you will not lose your way as you traverse the ocean of his teachings. The Buddha said that there are 12 links, nidanas, in the chain of interdependent co-arising. The earliest discourse in which the Buddha talked about a chain of causes was the Mahanidana Sutta, Digha Nikaya 15, although in that discourse only 9 links are given. In later teachings, the list was expanded to 12. The first is ignorance, avidya. Vidya means seeing, understanding, or light. Avidya means the lack of light, the lack of understanding, or blindness. Although ignorance is usually listed as the first link, it does not mean that ignorance is a first cause. It is also possible to begin the list with old age and death. The second link is volitional action, samskara, also translated as formations, impulses, motivating energy, karma formations, or the will to cling to being. When we have a lack of understanding, anger, irritation, or hatred can arise. The third link is consciousness, vijnana. Consciousness here means the whole of consciousness, individual and collective, mind consciousness and store consciousness, subject and object. And consciousness here is filled with unwholesome and erroneous tendencies connected with ignorance that are of the nature to bring about suffering. The fourth link is mind-body, or name and form, nama-rupa. Name, nama, means the mental element, and form, rupa, means the physical element of our being. Both mind and body are objects of our consciousness. When we look at our hand, it is an object of our consciousness. When we touch our anger, sadness, or happiness, these are also objects of our consciousness. The fifth link is the 6 ayatanas, which are the 6 sense organs, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind, accompanied by their objects, forms, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile objects, and objects of mind. These 6 ayatanas do not exist separately from mind, body, the fourth link, but are listed separately to help us see them more clearly. When a sense organ comes into contact, the 6th link, with a sense object, there has to be sense consciousness, which lies within the 3rd link. We are beginning to see how the 12 links inter are, how each link contains all the other links. The 6th link is the contact, sparsha, between sense organ, sense object, and sense consciousness. When eyes and form, ears and sound, nose and smell, tongue and taste, body and touch, and mind and object of mind come into contact, sense consciousness is born. Contact is a basis for feelings. It is a universal mental formation present in every mental formation. The 7th link is feelings, vedana, which can be pleasant unpleasant, neutral, or mixed. When a feeling is pleasant, we may become attached, the ninth link. The eighth link is craving, trishna, or desire. Craving is followed by grasping. The ninth link is grasping, or attachment, upadana. It means we are caught in the thralls of the object. The tenth link is coming to be, bhava, being or becoming. Because we desire something, it comes to be. We have to look deeply to know what we really want. The 11th link is birth, jati. The 12th link is old age, or decay, and death, jaramarana. Ignorance conditions volitional actions. Volitional actions condition consciousness. Consciousness conditions mind, body, and so on. As soon as ignorance is present, all the other links, volitional actions, consciousness, mind, body, and so on, are already there. Each link contains all the other links. Because there is ignorance, there are volitional actions. Because there are volitional actions, there is consciousness. Because there is consciousness, there is mind, body, and so on. In the five aggregates, there is nothing that we can call a self. Ignorance is the inability to see this truth. Consciousness, mind, body, the six senses, and their objects, contact, and feeling, are the effect of ignorance and volitional actions. Because of craving, grasping, and coming to be, there will be birth and death, which means the continuation of this wheel, or chain, again and again. When artists illustrate the 12 links of interdependent co-arising, they often draw a blind woman to represent ignorance, a man gathering fruit in the jungle, or a potter at work to illustrate volitional actions, a restless monkey grasping this and that for consciousness, a boat to represent mind-body, a house with many windows for the six senses and their objects, a man and a woman close to each other to represent contact, a man pierced by an arrow for feeling, a man drinking wine for craving or thirst, a man and a woman in sexual union, or a man picking fruit from a tree to represent attachment or grasping, a pregnant woman for coming to be, a woman giving birth for birth, and an old woman leaning on a stick or a man carrying a corpse on his back or his shoulder for old age and death. Another way that artists sometimes depict the 12 links is to draw an embryo in the womb for consciousness, the child just before birth for mind-body, the child from 1 to 2 years old when his or her life is dominated by touching, for the six senses and their objects, the same child from 3 to 5 years old for contact, and an adult for desire or attachment. There do not have to be exactly 12 links. In the Abhidharma texts of the Sarvastivada school, it says that you can teach 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 up to 12 links. There is a collection, basket, of Buddhist teachings called Abhidharma, Super Dharma. These are extended explanations of the teachings the Buddha gave. At first, in order to lend credence to their work, the authors of the Abhidharma tried to make these writings look like discourses of the Buddha. In the second stage, these writings were accepted as independent and given the name Abhidharma. During the third stage, as Abhidharma developed, it became more and more analytical. This fine and detailed analysis is often dry and difficult to understand. Sometimes it is analysis just for the sake of analysis, rather than guidance for the practice to help us transform our suffering. The fourth and final stage of Abhidharma was to shorten and simplify the long, detailed analyses so that they became easier to understand. The one link belongs to the unconditioned realm, asamskrita. The two links are cause and effect. The three links are past, present, and future. The four links are ignorance, volitional actions, birth, and old age and death. The five links are craving, grasping, coming to be, birth, and old age and death. The six links are past cause, present cause, future cause, past result, present result, and future result.